Retail gets snowed under.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as we get started trading for the day and for the short Christmas week. We're going to ask that question right now, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now, about 0.9% for the S&P. The NASDAQ up about that much as well. The Dow adding 83 points right now at 10,412. Everybody's up in Europe right now as well, more than a percent, maybe a percent and a half for the FTSE in London. And in Asia, Japanese and Chinese shares rose, but the Hang Seng was off more than a percent today. You know, it was supposed to be the busiest shopping weekend of the year, but instead of digging through sales racks, people were digging through a bunch of snow in the Northeast. That means a lot of lost revenue and the hope that this week will make up for it. University of Maryland economics professor Peter Maurice, who was in that mess over the weekend, he joins us live from College Park. Good morning, Professor.
Morning.
You recovering?
18 inches of snow.
That's a lot. So did the storm merely delay the shopping at bricks and mortars, or did it force people to migrate online?
Many people migrated online. Some will return in higher numbers to bricks and mortar this week, but overall brick and mortar won't do as well.
And what about the, you know, so if everybody's online, who's winning there?
Well, the shippers are winning, and to some extent the online retailers, because they'll get a higher price, and they charge a premium for shipping 2 day, 3 day, that really doesn't cost them that much more.
And so, I mean, what kind of discounts do you think we'll get online or even in the stores? I mean, will there be discounts this week to try and sort of compensate for what happened last weekend?
There won't be additional discounts online, but they will be in the stores because they can't sell that stuff any other way. They have to move it out by foot. So look for deeper discounts this week than we would have had, better bargains. Tuesday is a great day to be in the mall.
And some of the big national retailers, Peter, you know, they get about a quarter of their sales from the Northeast. But what about the local merchants that really got slammed this weekend? How do they recover from something like this?
This is toughest on them unless they were selling into the blizzard, namely selling snow shovels and salt and things of that nature. This is toughest for them because they don't have an online presence. Walmart does, so it picks up online sales. And at the expense of JCPenney, say, who doesn't have as strong an online presence.
All right. Peter Maurice, University of Maryland professor, we do appreciate it.
All the best.
Thank you so much. It wasn't the snow that kept the Senate locked in at the Capitol. The Democratic majority was voting into the wee hours this morning on advancing health care reform. Let's bring in Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman to give us the lowdown on what's in that bill and who it affects. Now, not one Republican voted for the advancement of this bill. So let's bring in Mitchell right now. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Steve.
So it's been called sweeping and historic. Does it really change health care coverage for that much for ordinary Americans?
Well, most Americans are still going to get their coverage from their employer. In the Senate version, individuals who aren't on an employer's plan will have to buy insurance or pay a fine. They'll get a government subsidy if they can't afford it. And for employers, all but the smallest ones, they'll see fines if they don't offer coverage, but only if workers have to go to the government to get that subsidy.
And Mitchell, what about the insurance companies?
Well, first, they've got to insure everybody. There's no exclusions for pre-existing conditions, and they can't raise rates too much on older people. This Senate bill also included a requirement that health insurance companies spend a certain amount on actual health care expenses. If they don't, they pay a higher tax. Henry Aaron is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
The Senate bill contains pretty tight rules on what are called medical loss ratios. That is the percentage of premiums that insurance companies have to pay out in medical benefits. Those required payout rates are quite high.
And Aaron expects insurance companies to push back on this one to protect their profits before a final bill is negotiated with the House and handed to the president. Nonprofit health insurance plans, by the way, will do a little better here, and they may avoid this tax surcharge.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman live with us this morning. Mitchell, thanks.
You're welcome.
We got word this morning that French drug maker Sanofi Aventis will buy Tennessee-based health products Chatham, the giant health products Chatham. It's a $1.9 billion deal. Chatham makes icy hot cream and other health-related products. Its stock is up a whopping 32% this morning. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, December 21st, 2009 at marketplace.org. It's been a bit of a blowback today to last week's UN Climate Change Summit. The conference ended over the weekend with a bare minimum agreement on heat-trapping gases. And now the so-called price of carbon is lower in Europe. Let's bring in Marketplace's Stephen Beard with the latest. He's joining us live from London. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So obvious first question, what's traded in the carbon market?
Carbon allowances. This is all about trying to make companies pay when they emit more carbon, so they'll emit less and put more money into non-carbon energy sources. So mainly here in Europe, you have this cap and trade system. Many European companies have had their levels of carbon emissions capped. If those companies want to emit more, they have to buy carbon allowances issued by governments and then traded between companies. So when governments get really tough on carbon and crack down on emissions, these permits will become a lot more expensive.
And what happened to the price of those permits this morning?
They got a lot cheaper. They fell quite sharply this morning by 8%. That's having fallen by 6% at the end of last week. Trevor Sikorsky of Barclays Capital says the market is saying the Copenhagen summit was a failure.
It was that failure to really have an agreement that meant anything, that spelled out, you know, where we were really going to go in terms of global emission reductions. Nothing like that came out of Copenhagen.
He says any hopes that the price of carbon or carbon allowances would rise sharply in the short term, making it more expensive to pollute, those hopes have been dashed by the rather weak Copenhagen Accord.
All right. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Today, Diane Sawyer takes the helm of ABC's World News, replacing Charlie Gibson. It's definitely the big time. She'll be going up against Brian Williams on NBC and Katie Couric on CBS. These are, without a doubt, some of the most competitive jobs in the country. But is network news still the giant it used to be? Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith takes a look.
Walter Cronkite, Peter Jennings, Tom Brokaw, all household names. But will the next generation of news anchors enjoy the same kind of fame?
Network news has been losing an average of 1 million viewers a year for the last 25 years.
Tom Rosensteel is with the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism.
News consumption is now something that people do when it's convenient for them. And this has made the appointment viewing of the network evening news something that, you know, has been squeezed.
Still, don't count network news out just yet, says Marty Kaplan with the USC Annenberg School of Journalism. He says the audience is still substantial.
It's way smaller than it used to be. Nevertheless, the network evening news still has the largest public square in America.
About 23 million people tune into network news shows every night, and that's getting advertisers. Last year, ABC, NBC, and CBS sold an average of $157 million in ad revenue. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
If you're still in the market, you have just a few days to get a Christmas tree. Even in a bad economy, they can go for upwards of a couple hundred bucks. But if you have a little extra time and some elbow grease, you can find a cheaper alternative in the woods. Shannon Mullen reports.
America's national forests are full of bargain Christmas trees. For $10 or less, anyone can get a permit, go into the woods, and cut one down. The program's been around since the late 1940s, but the Forest Service says permit sales have increased 50% in the last 2 years.
I think because we've advertised it a little bit more, and of course with the economy.
Herb Karsten is a ranger in New Hampshire's White Mountain National Forest. He says tree cutters come here from near and far.
It's really cheap. These trees aren't the best looking. They don't look trimmed, and they're, you know, depends what you're looking for. But the experience, I think, is what most people come out for.
Including Greg Felling and Carrie Muldoon, who drove 2 hours from Boston, where they say Christmas trees are too expensive.
They charge by the foot in some places.
Yeah, by the foot. It's $10 by the foot with a $50 minimum.
Have you ever done this before, cut your own Christmas tree?
No, I've always went to like Home Depot, but yeah, it's my first time, so I'm really excited. And
so you made a day trip all the way up here for a Christmas tree?
It's having fun.
Yeah, it's beautiful country, and it's still a little bit costly to drive up here, but it's still cheaper than just going and buying a Christmas tree pre-cut.
And the Forest Service gets some help with habitat management. There are some places and certain size trees that are off limits, but for the most part, people can cut what they want. Muldoon and Felling spotted a nice 10-foot tree about a half mile into the woods.
Smells good.
It's a little more work. If you don't mind a little bit of adventure, I think it's well worth to get out here and do this. And it brings out, like, the man in the lodger.
Timber!
Muldoon and Felling say one downside to this process, there's no one to help you carry your tree back to the car and tie it to the roof. But at city prices, they might have paid $100 or more for the same size tree. Adventure not included. In the White Mountains of New Hampshire, I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
Commercial radio giant Citadel Broadcasting's filed for bankruptcy protection. It's the parent of powerhouse stations KABC in Los Angeles and WLS in Chicago. Today's the last day the Federal Communications Commission will take public comments on a national broadband plan. The idea is to ensure all Americans have high-speed internet access. The White House asked the FCC to have something together by February, and broadcasters have had a lot to say about the issue. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
If every American is going to have access to high-speed internet service, we're going to have to scare up more spectrum, more space on the airwaves for all that texting, calling, and downloading. But spectrum is scarce. Blair Levin heads the FCC's Broadband Task Force. He says we're already facing a crisis.
Consumers increasingly want to be able to use wireless means of communications to do a variety of things that require greater bandwidth.
Where do you get that bandwidth? From TV broadcasters. Levin says they don't need all their spectrum because most people get TV through cable. But broadcasters say they have plans for their airwaves. They want to beam live local TV to cell phones and laptops. Dennis Wharton is executive vice president of the National Association of Broadcasters.
The FCC, if it were to go through with some of these plans, would, in essence, kill this opportunity in the cradle.
Broadcasters plan to take that message to Congress when it considers the FCC's broadband plan next year. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, you heard about the snow on the East Coast, thousands of passengers stranded, and travelers called airlines looking for flight information. The website consumerist.com reports at Delta, those people on hold were treated with a loop of the holiday favorite, Let It Snow. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.